Good evening, everybody. This is David Noble, actually overlooking the River Forth and the Forth Bridges tonight. And I'm delighted on tonight's Radio EduTalk on the Professional Learning for Teachers channel to welcome George Gilchrist, who's a head teacher of two schools in the Scottish Borders. And we're going to be finding out about the practitioner inquiry that George and colleagues, including colleagues from Edinburgh University, have been working on over the last few years. So welcome to the show, George.
Thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be here, and thanks for the invite.
Okay. I'm really looking forward to tonight's show. And just before we start, I'll say that if you're listening into the live show, you can, as ever, get in touch in two ways. Firstly, you can email any comments, questions, or thoughts that you'd like to put to George. You can email edutalker, that's edutalkr, at hotmail.co.uk, and I'll keep a close eye out for anything coming in, and you can put those to George during the live show. But if you're also listening to the podcast, then you know, feel free to get in touch and we'll pass anything you'd like to comment on to George after the show. And you can also use Twitter. If you just pop something up on Twitter using the hashtag EduTalk, that's EduTalk. And I'd like to welcome any new listeners to the show. I know that EduTalk's been getting a bit of coverage over the last couple of weeks, so you're most welcome, and I hope you find tonight's show engaging. To start off with, Josh, can you just give us a kind of brief background to your career in education and your present roles?
Well, I was someone who trained down in England in the 1970s, and I was out of education for a while. I taught for a short while in England, and then I was out of education for quite a while in business and commerce. But I returned to education in 1991, and since then I've been working in the Borders. So that's what's up, 22 years. And I came back into education just as 5 to 14 was coming into place in Scottish schools. So it was a pretty good time for me to come back, because my knowledge of 5 to 14 equated to the same as everybody else's at that time, because we were all just trying to engage with it and find out about it. So I've been working in the Borders for the last 21 years, and I'm currently head teacher of two primary schools, one in Jedburgh, and the other one is a bit smaller. That's just outside of Jedburgh, small village schools. The Jedburgh school is about 260 pupils, and the village school has currently around 42-43 pupils. So I've been a head teacher since 1999. I started off as head teacher in a small village school in the Borders, and then I moved to my current post about 7 years ago.
And I should say that we do a bit of preparation before these shows on educational research and action research. If you are interested in kind of reading or delving in deeper into the kind of subject matter while you're listening to George this evening, either live or through the podcast, then if you just go to the website edutalk.cc and then click on the tab entitled Professional Learning for Teachers, you'll then in the middle of the page you'll see a link to the show's recommended reading, and George has suggested a few key texts around practitioner inquiry, and we've also linked some aspects of tonight's show to the new, I suppose it's still quite new, GTCS standard for career long professional learning, and George has also kindly provided us a link to his academic poster presentation, and that's also available on the Professional Learning for Teachers homepage. And just at this point, just read out what your kind of questions that you're posing to listeners this evening. The first one is, what would you see as the benefits of adopting a practitioner inquiry approach to teacher and whole school development? And what would you see difficulties or tensions within such an approach? So first of all, George, could you just tell us how you came and how your staff came to start to consider introducing practitioner inquiry and your particular focus into your schools?
Yeah, well, our first engagement started about 3.5 years ago. And it came about from two reasons and two sources, really. And the first was that our own self-evaluation, speaking to the staff and within both schools, our own self-evaluation was telling us that teachers were feeling a bit overwhelmed by everything they had to do with curriculum for excellence. All the changes that were, they felt as though they had lots of different things to deal with, and they were feeling a bit swamped by everything that was facing them, and they weren't feeling very confident. When we sort of pinned them down and tried to identify what it was exactly that was troubling them, one of the key aspects was their understanding around aspects of the teaching of literacy and language in terms of genre and writing and connecting genre and writing and reading and talking and listening. And there were whole sort of issues around the teaching of language that they said they would welcome some more support with. I must admit, I'd been asking them before that some pretty hard questions along the lines of what are you doing in your classroom, why are you doing it, how do you know what the impact is for the learners, and do you know if the impact is what you think it is? So those were pretty challenging questions for them to hear, but I was trying to do that in a supportive way, not just going in and criticising, because I must admit I was starting with a staff who were at a high level anyway. So there was this push from the staff about, you know, we would really welcome some input around aspects of language. And the other thing we were getting from, which was coming from the senior management team, myself and the DHT and the PT, and from staff as well, was a general dissatisfaction around CPD that staff had done up to then. The staff had been really busy and had been on off and done lots of CPD activities, but actually when we sort of got down to the nitty-gritty and said, well, what's been the impact of courses and events you've attended? What's been the impact in your classroom? People were really struggling to identify what had changed in the classroom as a result of attending various CPD courses. So we were coming round. We'd been, prior to 4 years ago, we'd been engaged in looking at Fernstein's mediated learning approaches to teaching and learning in both schools. And the approach we'd taken there was we were using staff within the school with expertise and experience who'd been trained in IE and around Fernstein's work, and we were using them to help disseminate and to share that with other staff. And what staff were telling us was that it was much more engaging and much more meaningful when it was their own colleagues and they were working with their own colleagues to collaborate and improve and develop what they practice in the classroom. So that sort of made us really think, well, actually, you know, instead of spending all this money going off and doing different courses, might not a better approach be that we focus more on ourselves and the expertise within the school and expertise that we knew was around there outside the school as well, that would help us to develop and take us on from where we were rather than a notional idea of where we were in terms of our practice. So I got in touch with Gillian Robinson from Edinburgh University, and after discussions with the staff, I had a conversation with Gillian and said, look, here's where we are. Here's what the staff are telling me. They're telling me about dissatisfaction with CPD, and they're also telling me they need support with aspects of language. Now, Gillian, her area of expertise is is around language. So she seemed a natural person to speak to. And I spoke to her, and we sort of said, now, how can we support staff? Now, she was talking about practitioner inquiry, but we had staff who we didn't want to go in straight away with and say, right, we're going to embark on a practitioner inquiry approach to school development or individual development. So what we did was we came up with an idea that Julian could come into school and support teachers around aspects of language teaching. And the approach she would take would require the staff to do some professional reading, do some collaboration, have professional dialogue around what they were hearing and what around their own practice. We're doing peer observations on their own practice. And we never even mentioned the term practitioner inquiry in the first 6 to 9 months. We just said, if we're going to use Gillian and we're going to engage with the university, there's a commit. We need a commitment from yourselves. We'll provide the time within CAT sessions and in-service time to allow you to do it. But there is a commitment, not only just Gillian coming in and delivering CAT sessions, but she would require all staff, including the senior management team, to do some reading, professional reading around the aspects of language teaching that she was trying to support us with. And so that's how we started. And we started with Gillian coming in, doing some CAT sessions around language, giving the staff some professional reading to do around aspects of that as well. But immediately we were starting to focus not just on genre and the different language. We were also focusing on pedagogy and how we teach and the impact of our teaching within the classroom. And it wasn't until the sort of towards the end of the first year of engagement that we started to use the term practitioner inquiry or professional inquiry. Because I think if we'd gone straight in and said, right, this is the approach we're going to do, take, that people might have been put off by that or been frightened a bit by that because they were feeling overwhelmed anyway. The key message was they were looking for support, so that's what we were doing. We were giving them support to move the practice and their understanding forward. And so we didn't want to go in and say, right, this is what we're going to do, and it's at a pretty high level. We had to take people on from where they were and how they were feeling, and hopefully have an impact on the practice. And that's what happened. I mean, we were 6 months into the first year of engagement. We had an HMI inspection in one of the schools. And after 6 months, the HMI lead inspectors said to me 2 days at the inspection, I told him what we were doing, and he was very interested to hear that. And he said, I can see the impact already in the people's work, that of the work that you've been doing with the university. And through conversations with the children, I can see the depth of their understanding around the aspects of genre that you've been focusing on. Now, that was great. That was super for me to hear that as a head teacher. We knew we believed ourselves we were having an impact pretty quickly, but to have that external validation come in from a very experienced HMI to say that sort of said to us, we were on the right track.
In terms of what kind of capacities or skills or approaches does the senior management team in both schools need to possess or display in order to even get something like this off the ground, to get staff on board, so to speak? And what must have been sold to them as a long-term project right from the start? And what kind of guarantees are you able to give staff that they'll get time and resources?
Absolutely, and that is key. I think the culture and ethos of the establishment is crucial because the staff certainly need to trust the senior management team and know that they're going to be supported. And what we were saying to staff and the message, and we've been working on, you know, developing that sort of culture ever since I arrived in Parkside, one of the schools, 7 years ago, and in the other as well. What we'd been trying to get was a culture where it was based around collaboration, and it was based around trust, but it was focused on we start everything from our values, and I've done that from day one. And from day one, we've collectively agreed what our values are in both schools, and from those values, we identify. We can, you know, it's so easy for us to identify what our priorities are, and our core priorities, and that's acknowledged in both schools by all staff, are around teaching and learning and improving outcomes for our learners. And so that's where we start from. Anything that we're doing has to have a positive impact on that. And if it doesn't, you know, I've said from day one of me myself being in the school, and staff have bought into that as well, is that if we're doing things that aren't having a positive impact, we need to stop doing those. If we can't show they're having a positive impact, we need to stop doing them and do things that are having a positive impact. So you certainly have to have a high degree of trust, and staff have to feel confident that it's okay for them to admit, just as I do, when we don't know. What we don't know, and it's okay to say that because that's part of the learning process. We have to be clear about where we are in our practice and our understanding before we can identify the steps we need to make to move forward. And so, if you're in an establishment where you haven't got that culture and you haven't been able to spend the time to develop such a culture, I think that's a prerequisite before you can go down this sort of approach. But as I say, we've been doing the groundwork on that for a few years before we'd even got to this. So staff knew that when we were saying that if they wanted to go down this road, it was their decision, basically, because we said, here's a possible approach, but I'm not telling you have to do this, but it could be an approach that is beneficial to you as individuals, and I can see it as being an approach that's beneficial to both schools as establishments as well. But they had to hear it. They had to hear it from Gillian from the university. They had to hear it from myself, the DHT, and the principal teacher as well. And they had to see that at the outset, we sat down and we said, right, this is the commitment from you in terms of time. This is the commitment from us in terms of support and our involvement as well. And I think it's really crucial that head teachers and DHTs and PTs, everyone's involved. I don't think this is an approach where you can just say, oh, here's an approach you can do, off you go, get on with it. I think you've got to roll your sleeves up and get involved with it in it as well. All senior managers have, and you've got to model the behaviours as well. So that's why this year I've produced a research poster, because that's what all the staff did last year, and I thought it was only fair that, you know, that I showed that I was taking exactly the same approach to my own leadership as I was asking them to take in the schools, in the classrooms. So that needs to be there, and then you need to sit down and say, right, if we've got 195 collegiate hours over the year, how many of those hours are we going to devote to activities and dialogue and conversations around practitioner inquiry. And if we're being honest, we didn't devote enough time in the first year because we didn't, none of us fully understood what would the time commitment that would be required to do this properly so that you bring about deep and meaningful and sustainable change in practice. So, but all the way through that first year and ever since, we're almost in negotiation with staff on a weekly basis, where we're saying to them, right, how are things? Are we going too fast? Are we moving too fast? Do you understand? Has your understanding improved? Has your practice developed? Do you think we're going too quick? Do we need to? And sometimes we had to just say, whoa, we need to stop. We have gone too quick. We need to go back a few steps before we go forward. Now, when staff see that that's the practice and that's the norm, there's you have that trust and you have and they have that confidence that it's okay to say, come to me or come to the DHT and say, look, I think we need to back off a bit or we need to go back a few steps because things have moved on too quickly. And that, we certainly saw that in the first year. We're better now. I mean, here we are into our fourth year and we're better now at identifying the time that's required for taking this approach. But I also think it's really crucial that senior managers are tuned into the sort of the mood music of the staff and of the schools, and they're picking and you can only do that by being involved in the whole process yourself. So you're picking up the vibes if you need to, that people are feeling, this has got out of control somehow, or we've gone a little bit too quick, or and we do need to stop or slow down or go backwards. And as long as you're doing that's okay. It's not an approach where you can. There's nothing linear about this in terms of development at all. It's as people know, anything worth doing in terms of learning and development on an individual basis and on an institutional basis is complex and it's messy. And people need to recognize that, and we certainly do. And so you have to be aware of all that, but you certainly need to spend the time to create the atmosphere and the culture and an ethos that's based around shared values and based around what the core business is that everyone's about and trying to improve. Does that answer
you
the question?
Yeah, absolutely. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I'll just say again, if you're listening to the live show or even the podcast, and you want to get in touch, then just drop us an email or put something on Twitter and we'll be able to pick that up almost immediately. Now, you mentioned the poster that you produced, and I understand colleagues produce posters as well. And you,
yeah.
You actually quote one of my tutors at Jordan Hill, John Macbeth, change is best evaluated against impact and outcomes. And on your poster, there's 8 different areas of impact that you've identified through the first 3 years of this leadership for learning journey. Now, the ones around kind of pupil attainment and achievement having improved, and teachers making connections between practice theory and research, drawing and literature, and better assessment and design of teaching and learning for progression. Well, that's me just picking out some of the areas of impact that you state that has been evidenced. So, can you say a bit more about how you gathered data to actually measure these outcomes and to show impact?
Yeah, again, as with any of this, nothing is simple and nothing is easy about it. But I like that because there has to be depth about not only what we're doing and what we're attempting to do, but there has to be depth in terms of how you measure the impact as well. So what we've used are a whole host of monitoring and evaluation and observations and tracking, and we've got hard summative assessments that we can show to demonstrate progress in learners' attainment and their achievement. But we've also got softer evidence, if you like, the evidence that you get on a day-to-day basis by being in classrooms and having conversations with pupils as well. So it's a mixture of both. So I, as part of our self-evaluation processes, we believe as a staff that self-evaluation happens every day. Processes are happening every day, and they start with the pupils and the teachers in the classroom being reflective about their learning and about their practice, and about them being able to have a conversation with whoever, whether it be someone from the senior management team, whether it be someone from outside the school, whether it be a parent, that staff really know where the pupils are in terms of their learning. Now, what we ask them to do is tell us where the pupils were in the learning, where they are now, and where they're going next. And we ask the same questions of the pupils as well, as part of the triangulation of the evidence that we're looking for. And we have conversations we have a formal program and monitoring and observation that happens over a year, which includes class visits, sampling of work, teacher consultations, CAT sessions, various activities that are mapped out over the year. But I actually believe it's the ones that happen in between all of those. Those are formal, and teachers know, they're agreed with teachers, and teachers know and they understand when those sort of activities are going to happen, and they give you a certain amount of evidence. But I actually think it's the evidence that you're gathering in between all of those activities that is sometimes more valuable and more reflective of where we actually are. So it's the daily, day-to-day interactions you have in classrooms, the conversations you have with teachers about learning and teaching and about where they are and how their inquiry is going and what's been the impact on the pupils. That's feeding into the overall picture as well. And it's also the evidence you gain from colleagues and visitors from outside the school coming into the school and talking about their observations of what they're seeing as going on in the classrooms and going on in the staff room and their conversations with teachers as well. So we've got all that. We've got, as part of the inquiries, teachers have been videoing themselves working with children and reflecting on what the videos show. They've been carrying out audio recording of interviews and work with pupils as well. The posters that the teachers produced last year, we asked each member of staff last year as part of the process. They were 3 years down the line, and we said, right, it would be. We talked to them about research posters as used in universities, and Gillian brought in some examples, and we talked to them about how this is a way of presenting your evidence and presenting the results of your inquiry, not only for your benefit, but also for so that you could share that with colleagues and with other people as well. So that's last year, that's what we asked people to do. So we've got some fabulous posters that have been produced by staff about the focus of their inquiry last year. And last year we'd moved on to looking at aspects of teaching in maths around mathematics. And so a lot of the posters, well, all of the posters that were produced last year were around aspects of teaching in maths. And that went from nursery classes right through to P7 classes as well. And they are. We've got, four, five, six posters that are absolutely fabulous. That, you know, and Gillian and others have told me they're at master's level already, the work that people have produced and has exhibited in the posters. But that's not to say they're all at that level. They're not. And you wouldn't expect that. But every single member of staff produced some sort of a poster that they were able to talk to, and that's how we started this session. We started this session with staff talking about their inquiries from last year, what the focus was, why they decided to choose that particular focus, what really they did round about that, how they collaborated with colleagues to explore their understanding and explore their practice, what they changed in their practice as a result of reading and research they'd done, and the impact that that had had, and what the next steps. This whole thing is a cyclical, continuous process, and it's not. It's like the journey we're on in school development. There's really no end of it, no end to it. It just keeps repeating, and that's what I really like about it. So we've got all this evidence in as I say, we've got hard evidence in terms of the evidence we've collected in school, and teachers have got in the classes, and we've got as a senior management team, and we've got all this other evidence that we've been documenting and keeping a record of what people have been saying to us as well. So there's a whole raft of evidence that allows us to say, you know, this has had a massive impact on individual members of staff and on the schools that I work in and we're working in at the moment. And we've got all this evidence, this hard evidence, that will support that. And the evidence comes not just from ourselves, it comes from the teachers, it comes from the pupils, it comes from parents, it comes from visitors to the school, including HMIE, including Care Commission, whoever has been in the school and has made observations. Colleagues from the local authority have come in, and anyone who's been in has given us feedback and given us information about what they've seen compared to what they've seen on previous visits. And that all gives us confidence in the statements we're making about what's improved as a result of taking this approach.
Mm-hmm. And just come back to your poster again, you know, that is really refreshing. I mean, all the guests that have been on EduTalk talking about research and changing their practice and such, like, everybody is very open and willing to share some of the pitfalls and some of the difficulties. And I know that you've done that through a section in your own poster, and of course you use Twitter extensively, and I know many people enjoy following your Twitter feed, and you've blogged regularly about this practitioner inquiry. So did you maybe want to say about how important it is to be open with yourself and the wider community and your staff, and you know, what are some of the pitfalls that you and your staff have encountered as we move into this kind of master's professional learning?
Yeah, I think I've touched on some of them already, and the first one, you know, that I identify on the poster is the Pandora's box. It is a Pandora's box, and once you open it, and once you go down this route, and once staff have gone down this route, it's very challenging. It's very challenging for staff, and it's very challenging for senior management team. But once you've taken the step to go down this route, I don't think there's any way back. I don't think you put it back in the box and say, that was good for a year or two, but let's go back to, and everyone can go off and do CPD courses. And, you know, they just won't, staff won't won't go with that, you know, because we've got a staff now who ask hard questions. You know, if I suggest a change in anything that we might be doing, often I'll get, well, where's the evidence for that, and what have you got that's backing you up that says that would be a good thing for us to do, which is fab, you know, absolutely fab. That you've got people and colleagues who are thinking at that level, and you know, as a head teacher, I just think, you know, that is fantastic. So it is a Pandora's box. There's no going back. It's challenging. It's messy. It's complex. It's not easy. There's nothing linear about this, and nothing worth doing is linear as far as I'm concerned. You know, there's all sorts of, you know, I've long said, you know, learning and work in schools is complex. It's a complex business because we are in the people business, and people are complicated and people are complex, and what works on one day might not work the next day because of that unknown factor of around people. So, but the principles I think are transferable anywhere. So it challenges, one of the first things that we did was, and I've put it on the poster, it challenges orthodoxies. So normal practice, stuff that's gone on for years, because it's always gone on, like hearing people read, hearing kids read every week or twice a week or three times a week, even when they're in primary 7 or primary 6 and they've got a reading age of 15 plus, what is the point of carrying on doing that? Where is the learning? Where is the deepening of understanding of carrying on doing that and ploughing through a reading scheme because they haven't got to the end of it, when at home they're going home and reading really complicated, complex novels? And when they've got reading ages like that, that's what we should be doing with them. We shouldn't be still thinking, oh, I've got to hear them read twice a week or once a week or whatever it is. Unless there's an educational value in what you're doing in your classroom, stop doing it and do something that does have value, and stop doing things just because it's IB and they've always been done. The things that have always been done. That is, you know, something to bear in mind if you're thinking of about going down this route. I think the support of the critical friend, as I describe her, in someone from outside the school, someone who is an expert not only in learning, in pupil learning, but in teacher learning, like we've had and still have with Gillian Robinson. I think that's been really, really important for us from the outset. But we've moved on from that now, and I was talking to Gillian quite recently and saying, and she recognises, well, we've got staff now who are capable of being that critical friend and supportive friend to other establishments, and that's what we started doing. And so we've started moving, we started working with staff from another local primary school who are just beginning this journey themselves. We're talking to the staff, to the senior management team in the local secondary school as well, and they're really interested in what we're doing. Myself and teachers from the school, we're going out, and whenever we get the opportunity like this tonight, we're going out and sharing our experiences and telling people about the impact and the benefits and the health warnings that go along taking a practitioner or professional inquiry approach. You do need that open and supportive culture. The head teacher and the senior management team cannot, you know, I've seen schools, I've been in schools where a head teacher says to a DHT, teaching and learning, that's your responsibility. Really? You know, I don't believe that. I think all head teachers really need to understand learning and teaching, and they need to understand the learning and teaching that's going on in the schools. And the only way they can do that is by being thoroughly involved in the developments that are going on and being in classrooms on a regular basis. And if you see that as a priority, you create time and you make sure you've got time that allows you to do that. This is not a one-size-fits-all approach. You can't lift. I couldn't lift what we've done in the two schools that I manage and drop it into two other schools and expect the same results. It would not work if you took that approach. Every school is in a different position. Every member of staff is in a different position. And before you start on a journey like this, you need to know what that position is. You need to be clear about where people are in terms of their development. And it could be that you look at your self-evaluation, you look at where you're at, and you think, no, that's a step too far at the moment. But we can work towards that, and we can take those baby steps we need to start to get teachers to where they would need to be to start a journey like the one we've just been on for the last 3.5-4 years. And because all the staff are different, the speed of change and the speed of impact will be different with each of them and in each classroom as well, and you've got to accept that. There will be some who will shoot on, and in terms of their understanding and the development of the practice, and there are others that will move slowly on, and that's fine as well. And as a head teacher, all I can ask is that teachers are being reflective, they're engaging, they're supporting what we're trying to do, and they're trying to move their practice on a little bit each day, each week, each month, whatever, just so that in 12 months' time, they're a different teacher from what they were 12 months ago. And if they are, if they've moved on and they've developed their understanding and they've developed the practice, as a head teacher, I think that's as much as I can ask. Yes, I'll have the ones who will be miles on further on, but if all of them have moved on, how many CPD activities can we sort of evidence that have had that impact across a whole staff? And in my 13, 14 years of being a head teacher, I've not seen anything better than this approach in having a deep impact on practice and understanding, and therefore improved teaching and learning for pupils, improved attainment and achievement for pupils, and that's what we're all about. So, and it's also sustainable, and it's because it's a disposition, it's a way of being. I've had staff who've moved on to other schools, and they've taken the same approach with them to other schools because that's the way they work now, and that's the way they think. And we've got new staff who've come in, and fairly quickly they begin to understand what we're about and how we're there to support them and how they can be supported with other colleagues to develop their own practice by taking a similar approach. So it's not easy, but boy, is it worth doing, you know. And I'm not saying it's the only approach to school and individual development, but it's the one, as I say, it's the one that has had the biggest impact that I've seen in my time as a head teacher.
Just to finish up, George, I was going to ask a question about, put my business hat on for a moment, about the kind of opportunity cost, you know, that you're kind of foregoing by going with this project. But I think you've kind of convinced me that what you've done is you've changed the mindset of at least the majority of your staff. So I was going to ask, you know, are there kind of mandatory, so to speak, areas of CPD that are getting missed out, or is it really just the case that these teachers now, where they have a need, they know how to engage in collegiate dialogue or to actually go out with the school and you know, whether it's academic literature or elsewhere, they can just do it themselves?
Yeah, I think that's exactly where they're at now, that they understand the process now, that if they're reflecting on their practice and they think, oh, there's something going on there that I'm not sure about, they know exactly how to examine that closely, gather the evidence, do some reading and research about that. They know where to tap into support if they need to, further support for that. And therefore, they can move their own practice. The proof will be really this year, will really be the proof, because what we've said to staff this year is you decide completely yourselves. You don't all have to do maths, you don't all have to do language. You decide on one area of your practice you want to focus on this year. And we want you to carry out an inquiry. We'll touch base with you throughout the year on how things are going. And at the end of the year, you can present your findings and share the findings with your colleagues. They'll all know them anyway because they're talking to each other every day. But at the end of the year, you can share your findings with us, with everyone. And it will be great to see, and I'm sure I am going to see, that I've got staff who now thoroughly understand and are engaged and have this disposition that they're going to produce posters or presentations that are equally of the standard that they produced last year, if not even better. So it will be really interesting to see what comes out of this year. And yes, in year one, we said to staff, you know, if we're taking this approach, we're going to have to, Gillian Robinson, the university aren't going to let her come work for us for nothing. We're going to have to pay for that. But what we agreed as a staff in the first year, we would devote all our CPD budget. Everybody would give up their allocation of the CPD budget, and we would use it to buy in Gillian's expertise. And each year, when we've done an evaluation, we've asked them the same question: do you want to continue to take that approach? We still manage to keep some budget that's allowed staff to go off and do individual things that have been connected to their inquiry as well. So we still allowed, being able to allow that to happen. There is a cost attached to it as well, but the 4 years down the road, we're almost at the stage where it's self-sustainable, where staff know the processes, they know where they can access the support, they know where to go to find evidence and find research based on whatever their inquiry is as well. So I think this is an approach that more and more schools should adopt and are going to adopt, because CPD budgets and budgets available to send people off on expensive courses or to expensive events, they're not increasing, they're diminishing. So I think it's even more important that development comes from within the teachers and within the schools, rather than spending money going off and doing things, because the money's not going to be there shortly anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you've been listening to George Gilchrist, teacher on the Scottish Borders on Radio Edutalk this evening, and George, I'd like to thank you so much at the end of what no doubt it's been another very busy week as we're approaching the winter holidays. Thank you again. I'll just point out that, as I said before, George is very active on Twitter, and it's at Gilchrist George, is that right?
Yes, at Gilchrist George, and there's the blog as well if people want to go there. But if anyone wants to ask any questions via Twitter or via the blog, and that's gg1952.blogspot.co.uk, I'm more than willing to welcome. And if I can help anybody, if anyone's thinking of taking this approach and they would like to talk to me in more depth about it, about what we've been doing, and if I can support anyone, given all my other commitments of running two schools, I'll certainly help wherever I could.
Okay, that's fantastic, George, and best wishes for the future.